fuck.
You're a bastard.
I still haven't beaten Adam's record of saying it in the middle of the intro music.
Oh, one of these days I'm going to scream it before the intro music. It's going to happen. We'll probably get flagged on iTunes. Welcome to the Negative One Podcast.
Oh, did I derail you a little bit?
You did. I was going to say, welcome to the Negative One Podcast, where Thomas criticizes Matt for buying guitars, but really likes the new one I bought.
Oh, man, that thing is beautiful.
It's gorgeous, and it plays like heaven.
It
plays like heaven.
I've fingered it a little bit. I'm a child. So I've messed with it a little bit, but it's in a key that I can't play in, so I can't really mess with it, yeah. But that thing is, man, that's a masterpiece of a guitar.
Yeah, it's a good guitar. Straight plug, because I'm an ESP and Paul Reed Smith guy. This is an Ibanez RG Iron Cross, I think is what they call
it. Hold on a second. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm drinking.
This week of the Neg One Podcast brought to you by Christmas beers, specifically, and we both agree, I cracked open a Great Lakes Christmas ale. It's just called Christmas.
You're just trying to get rid of what you have left from the holiday.
No, I'm being a friend, because trust me, the next it's one really I'm about to mention, I want forever. Yeah. I'm probably going to buy a case and keep it in the basement. So the first is the Great Lakes Christmas ale. I popped that open, lets you try a sip, and then I popped open the cream of the crop, Southern Tier Double Xmas, or 2 Xmas. Which is a fig, spice, cinnamon ale, double ale. And it is Christmas. And
yum, yum, yum.
Both are good, right?
Yeah.
Both are good. But as I said downstairs, Great Lakes Christmas, this is your in-laws, right? Yeah. This is
holiday time.
It's a good ale. It tastes a little like Christmas, but it's not quite your experience. It's not dialed in.
Somebody else is.
You're not in your jammies. You didn't just wake up in your bed. It's close.
Yeah.
It's close. It'll get you by. Southern Tier 2 Xmas. That's where it's at.
That's where you catch Santa leaving the presents under the tree. It's really good.
It is awesome.
You know the line, now bring us some figgy pudding. This is what I would imagine that would taste like with a little bit of alcohol in it.
Figgy pudding?
Figgy pudding.
Yeah, because we were just nerding out about it. The Great Lakes Ale is a standard ale that's double brewed, but it has honey and then Christmas spices. So like your cinnamon,
your nutmeg,
mm-hmm. a little bit of ginger. But the base is a honey ale. That is base of the Southern Tier 2 Xmas or double Christmas ale, whatever you want to fucking call it.
Figs. And orange.
Figs, orange peel.
It says spices.
Standard spices. So it's got all your standard nutmeg, cinnamon. And then I get a little hint of nuttiness out of it. So I think there might be grape nuts or something in the brew too, but it's outstanding. Absolutely. That is the best Christmas flavored ale or winter ale I've ever had.
I find it interesting since we're talking about this, it's a requirement for food. You have to put the ingredients in.
Yeah. But beer,
but for alcohol, you do not have to put the ingredients in.
Yeah.
I find that interesting.
Yeah. I don't think it's listed anywhere.
It's not. Just what they're marketing and what they're trying to sell, they put out there, but it doesn't put in there, this was brewed with buckwheat or whatever.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Not sure.
So is the guitar what you've been up to?
No.
Oh.
I actually got the guitar way back on Black Friday.
Yeah.
But I haven't flaunted it. Yeah.
No, I saw you messing with it when I came in this week, and I was like, oh, that's new.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And now that I think about it, I think it's been in the stand, and I just didn't notice it because you have so many.
Yeah, it's...
God, that's a beautiful guitar.
Yeah, it's 6 layers of ash on the body. It's got a Bubinga and American maple neck, and then the fretboard itself is bird's eye maple carved completely smooth. And it's thin, super thin action on the neck. It's a 26.5-inch scale, so the frets are a little bit further apart on each location, and then the neck is a little wider, and it just plays like a fucking dream.
So it looks like raw wood.
It's got a clear coat finish to it.
It's got a very small...
It's a drab. It's not a shiny clear coat.
Yeah.
It's a matte clear coat,
mm-hmm.
so it makes the natural wood look that
so
way.
No lacquer or anything needs to happen on that.
No, not at all. You still got to polish it, but it's never going to look like a shiny piece of wood. It's just going to look like wood. Yeah. But it does have a clear coat protecting the wood.
Gotcha.
It's a matte clear
coat. I was wondering, because I was thinking, well, that thing's going to get nicked up real quick.
No, it'll just be like a regular guitar. Mm. It'll be just like my painted ones that can be beat up a little bit.
Sure.
So
what have... What?
I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, so my Paul Reed Smith I have, that's a reflective glass lacquer.
Yeah.
So that's a natural wood. But it's got a flame maple top on it, but it looks shiny because of the clear coat.
Right.
The other one has the same thickness of clear coat. You just can't tell. So it looks like raw wood.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah. Same thickness. So... Yeah, what have I been doing lately? You know what I did? And I totally forgot to talk about it in past weeks, but holy shit, Arrival.
Oh, you texted me about that. I've not seen it yet.
By now,
I think I'm going to wait until it comes out on Blu-ray.
Believable.
Really?
It is amazing.
It's Amy Adams, right?
Amy Adams. Yeah. I walked into that movie knowing all of the following, which is less than they tell you in the ads. Number one, it's about a linguist. Mm-hmm. Number two, aliens land on Earth. Number three, Amy Adams is in it.
He plays the linguist.
I didn't know the rest of the cast.
Yep.
I didn't know what the implications were. I didn't know what it was technically about. I knew nothing. I walked in, had my mind blown for 2 hours, and had the quietest car ride home ever.
Yeah.
And it was so good.
I'll tell you why that passed on me is we saw the trailers for it. And in fact, I saw the trailer on Hulu because Hulu, I love, you can just search trailers.
Yeah.
And that's really great for my PlayStation that I watch everything on. And as soon as I saw it, I think Lindsay was in the bathroom, which is why I was just dicking around on Hulu for a minute. And she came out and I was like, no, you've got to sit down and watch this trailer.
Yeah.
And she did. And she was like, that looks really good. And then it didn't come to our local theater.
Really?
Which, you know, it's only a 5 theater.
Yeah.
So I get why I missed it. But
dude, if it's still out there, you have to see
it. Very interested. I might go to the Dollar Theater and see it.
You liked Interstellar, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Take Interstellar and the headiness of it and amplify the humanity factor to 11.
Hmm.
Like the movie makes you question the long-term implications of humans.
Yep.
And what we are and what we do and how we deal with one another.
Yep.
It's beautiful. It's such a good movie.
Yeah.
I cannot sing the praises of it enough. There are some flaws with it.
Sure.
Like, you're dealing with aliens. Who's the first country internationally to militarize against the aliens?
China.
Yeah, fucking nailed it. And guess who follows suit immediately?
China. And then us.
No. China. And then what other foreign nation's probably going to militarize?
Russia.
Yeah. So those tropes are there.
Yeah.
That's one of my only...
But I would say that that's just because that's the thinking of the world.
Right.
And the U.S. is in there somewhere.
But it's logical.
Yes.
It's logical. The fact that China and Russia go down that stereotypical path is probably the weakest part of the whole film. But then you see their perspective on it and you go, well, fuck, I can't blame them.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, I can't blame them. Are you kidding me? So I cannot. If it is in your local theater and you've liked some of the movies we've talked about that are a little headier, like Interstellar, No Country for Old Men, There Will Be Blood. What are some other more serious films we've done? Godfather.
Inception.
It is on that level and I think it is perfect. It is such a good movie.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, when I see it, maybe we'll do an episode on it and we'll put it around that. We might even put something off because I saw Arrival.
Maybe that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Because it's fucking good. I'm really irritated at myself for not bringing it up sooner because by now it's probably been ejected from theaters for like Rogue One because shit, it's January. So everything's gone.
Yeah. I think it's.
Oh, gone. Happy New Year, by the way.
Yeah. Happy New Year.
At least 2016 is gone.
Maybe we can start this one fresh. Can we have the people we lost back, please?
Can we just not fuck this one up? It's already going to be hard enough.
It's going to be a great year. It's going to be the best year. It's going to be the best.
It's going to be huge.
Be huge.
So stupid.
We have the best years.
Best years.
So me, what have I been doing lately? I finally, 7 months after it started, watch the most recent season of Game of Thrones.
I know what's going on,
mm-hmm.
but I haven't watched in a long time.
So they've surpassed the books from what I understand. Yeah. And I've not reread the books in a while, so I'm a little fuzzy on the details anymore anyway. I put this off because I was so turned off by last season's Game of Thrones, season 5.
Yeah.
And everybody kept saying, well, you need to see it. You need to see it. You didn't have HBO. I was like, I could care less. I'm not going to go spend $14.99 to go just get this one thing because that's all I was going to do. By the way, also Westworld. I've not seen it.
Neither have I, but I've heard nothing but good things.
But there was a free HBO weekend, Thanksgiving weekend. So I went and I was like, well, if it's free, and I found every Game of Thrones, and I got all Game of Thrones, and I got all of Westworld up to that point, and we finally binge watched Game of Thrones. And nice. Season 6 brought it back.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. The last three episodes of season 6 was some of the best television I've seen.
Nice.
And everything's pretty much coming to a head.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's season 7's the last one, right?
They've not talked about whether or not it'll be the last one or not.
Was season 6 the short season? Where no, they only did like short, a very small number of episodes?
They've all been 10 episodes.
I thought they were doing one that was only going to be 6 or 7.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't know anything about anything that might be coming, but I feel like the directions that they're going, assuming it ends the way that I think it will, they've only got one, maybe two seasons left.
I know that the end is coming.
Winter is coming. Well, yeah. Well, winter is here. Technically, winter is here.
Now it is.
Yes.
Good. They can stop fucking saying it.
Halfway through the season 6, winter is here.
That's good.
But yeah, some characters that I didn't think I would care about, I care about now. Some characters that I really hated before, I'm interested to see what happens. So yeah, I was...
I know that... Cersei ends up with the soccer mom haircut at some point.
The pixie.
The John and Kate plus 8 haircut.
Yes. Oh, wow. Yeah, pretty much.
Kate Gosselin, is that her name?
Kate Gosselin.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that happens for interesting reasons. That actually happened technically in the previous season, but they expound upon that more, and it's really good. Like, some bullshit happens, and you're like, oh, fuck.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm interested when you finally catch up.
4 is where I stopped.
4?
Fourth season is where I stopped watching. Yeah, but I know what happens in season 5 and 6.
Fifth season is tough to get through. But the sixth season, for one thing, they talk all this shit about the dragons and this, that, and the other, and then they never really do anything. They're just kind of antagonists in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah, that shit comes to an end. that comes to a head, and you're like, fuck yeah.
Speaking of dragons, and then we'll talk about to this week's assignment, which is Whiplash.
Whoop whoop.
I was going through Barnes and Noble when I was doing my Christmas shopping. I forgot about this too. And they put out some little statuettes for Harry Potter. Where they started making the creatures from Harry Potter?
For Fantastic Beasts.
No. Well, I guess that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they did...
Which, by the way, I'm wearing a Fantastic Beasts shirt right now.
Oh, is that what that is?
That's what that is.
Oh, yeah. See, I haven't Loot seen Crate. That. I'm not interested.
I've not seen it. I'm interested. I didn't see it, so I'm waiting for it to come out on Blu-ray as well.
Eh, I'm just not into the Harry Potter film universe. Actually, I'll give Fantastic Beasts its credit because it's a script that they had to write from the ground up, which means that it might not suck. Become an Obliviator. Recruiting now. Every half moon of the month. And then a crest.
Mac USA.
I'm interested to see if Fantastic Beasts sucks because the scripts for the Harry Potter films were so poor. Because they knew people would be walking in with the knowledge already. This doesn't exist. This is being built from nothing.
I've only heard from people who were already Harry Potter fans that it was really good.
Yeah, I know.
With one person who's not a Harry Potter fan saw it and was like, it was neat to watch, but she's not invested in the universe.
It's the Michael Bay of wizards.
But then again, if you weren't invested in the Marvel universe and you saw Doctor Strange, you might come away with it like, oh, it was neat to watch.
Yeah, but I don't know.
So, yeah. Whiplash.
They have these figurines now, and they had like a Hungarian horntail, and they had a basilisk, and they had a hippogriff, and they had like all the little creatures, but they were like decent, like maybe 5-inch statues, and they were really good, like really good, but they were $30 each. And I'm like, well.
But how much is a Dungeons & Dragons miniature?
So much I don't buy them.
Right. No, I'm talking about the miniatures for the game.
I totally get it. absolutely get it. But it's the first time I've ever seen Harry Potter merch. Like, oh, fuck, I'd buy that. And then you read it, you know, the price, and you're like, oh, fuck, I'm not buying that.
Right. But my point is D&D miniatures, both for the actual D&D or for the game D&D miniatures, which is a war game, are prohibitively expensive.
Oh, dude, a small single character one's at least between 9 and 15.
Yeah. So that's, imagine...
That's unpainted, unglued pewter.
Right. So you get one of the big ones if you want a dragon, and you're well into the $50 range.
Yeah.
So.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Anyway.
Whiplash.
I miss Dungeons and Dragons.
I love this movie. We talked about it. Like, it's one of those films that even if you don't think it, even if I can't argue it's top 10 I've ever seen, mm-hmm. it's like a part of my soul that I can't let go after having seen it. I can't get rid of it.
So we,
I can't get rid of the Whiplash experience.
When we watch movies, like when we rent them, I make a point to sit, even no matter how old the movie is, I make a point to sit through the trailers.
Yeah.
And with good movie, bad movie. And a lot of times with the indie films, if you skip that, you're never going to hear about some films and some films that are really good. I don't remember what we watched, but we saw a trailer for Whiplash and that went on our radar and then we couldn't find it. Now, what I found was after having watched this movie, I mentioned it a couple times to Lindsay and she's like, oh yeah, that's a movie that we need to watch. And then I would look for it. She was avoiding this movie. Hardcore avoiding this movie. And we'll talk about why in a bit.
This is a movie I can't separate from my personality. My wife was with me the first time I saw it, and she just let me sit in silence for a while after it ended.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she just let me sit quiet. And then eventually she just goes, woo! And right. I'm like, yeah, that's all we need to say. You want dinner? What do you want for dinner?
About some tears. You want some tears?
You text me actively during the watching of this film to tell me twice. To fuck myself. Two times.
Right. One time was after a specific scene, and I said, fuck you.
And at the very end,
I said, double fuck you.
So I have a partial clue on how this went. What? This got nominated to Hell and Back.
Did it?
Yes. This J.K. Simmons won an Oscar for Best Actor. Bald State Farm Insurance, Farmers Insurance guy. Best Supporting Actor. Yeah. Hands down, no competition.
No. J. Jonah Jameson.
Right.
Right?
At the end of the movie. Get me pictures of Spider-Man.
Right.
The whole movie. I just wanted to hear it come out of it. But also very yoked in this film. Fucking huge.
Who?
J.K. Simmons. He's gigantic in this
very
movie.
Yoked.
What yoked. He's huge. Oh, he's been drinking egg yolks and working out.
Gotcha. Yes. Gotcha. Yes. He's, I don't.
He's
I
even
think,
bigger now.
I think that's normal for him or normal-ish for him.
I think he's been bigger in the last couple of years than previous.
Older dude.
Mm-hmm.
Looks good.
Beat your ass. He beat my ass.
Yeah, of course. But he's also, from what I understand, a really nice guy.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes this so much more confusing, right?
Yeah. Why didn't you... It just went on your radar and you didn't?
Yeah, so I guess it came out in, what, 2014?
Yeah.
We had seen it as a trailer to something else that we'd rented. And we went, no, that's an indie film that we need to see. And I think it had already been out of the red box at that point or something. Or it was just not something we invested any money in. And since then, I've thought about it. It's like, there's a drumming movie I want to see. Because it's a drumming movie. That's what it's about to me. And I couldn't remember the name of it and this, that, and the other. And eventually I realized that this was it. And then I couldn't find it. And during the times when we would go up to a red box not knowing what we wanted and just kind of going through it, I remember seeing it and going maybe one or two times and going, oh, that's something we've talked about that we wanted to see. And Lindsay would talk me out of it for something different. And there's a reason for that. And I want to get into that in the second section.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah. Now, I was never a band guy.
No.
I didn't play an instrument. I sung choir is the best I can do.
Your perspective is so important to me today.
And, but I was not, I don't think I sing well. I think it was a passion of mine that I never really did well. And I never had any training. It was just high school choir, yeah. Right? Lindsay sang well. She had vocal coaches. She went to school for music. And I'll go back, like I said, go back into that. But she's got a completely different perspective than I do.
Yeah.
And I asked you when I walked in the door today, were you ever in band?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And?
Oh, yeah.
You were in band?
Yes.
You play instruments?
Yes.
How much did you do all 4 years high school band?
That's a fun story.
Yep. I'm getting to it for a reason.
I know. I got kicked out of band.
You got kicked out of band.
And I was a star music student. I missed a day of summer camp for band camp. I missed a day of marching practice because I had a fever and I had thrown up. And the instructor was already pissed off at the beginning of the year because I told him I would not be there at band camp week two. Because my family had vacation booked. So that was strike one. And then I got sick, which was strike two. And then I chose not to march that day, which was strike three. It's one thing to be sick and not play well. It's another thing to not show up because it's 130 degrees on the blacktop.
Right.
So I got removed from the music program. I got kicked out of jazz band. I got kicked out of marching band. I got kicked out of traditional band.
And now that was middle school or high school?
That was freshman year of high school. That's how I started high school, was getting kicked out of my passion.
So it was band camp, so that was in the summer. So it was your transition from middle to high.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I got booted, so I proceeded to take every music history and every music theory course and just remind the professor, like a dick kid, like, yeah, you kicked me out. Look at how good I am. You kicked me out. You kicked me out! And then like he would just say, you know, you can rejoin band if you want to. I'm like, no, fuck, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'll do my own thing. And actually, it was a blessing in disguise that I freed up all that musician's energy because then I could start my band and go do what I wanted instead of playing other people's music and doing their marches. But it's a brutal relationship that I had. And it effectively, in a lot of ways, prevented me from becoming a career musician. Because had I continued on my instruments and then done it for college and then eventually gone master or doctorate in my instruments, I would have led a completely different life than I have right now.
You'd have been jazz dude, not metal dude.
No, I always would have been metal dude. But I would have been jazz dude or metal dude, like, for a living, undisputable. I'm going to be one of those old guys who shows up at a bar and you go, what the fuck? Like, that kind
of thing. You would have been one of the greats. That's what you... That's how you're coming off. Understand where...
No. There's a difference.
Understand where I'm coming from in my seat having watched this movie.
It's the difference between being one of the greats and being a career musician.
Okay.
I would have been a career musician.
Gotcha.
For sure. Like, audio video engineering would have never come on my plate. That wasn't an alternative because I wasn't in the band program. And that's the way I ran, and it completely changed my entire trajectory on life. And I don't know if it would have been less or more fulfilling because I've had glimpses and moments where I could have gone back to being a professional musician and I didn't. It's a very weird, interesting conversation that publicly I can't have
because
where I ended up and what my current career is. But yeah, it's interesting. And this movie, as you can already see, I have a massive bias for. I think every musician on the planet Whiplash moved an inner part of their soul that they don't like to talk about. So
let's go ahead, take our first break. And then I want to get into Lindsay's perspective versus mine and what this movie was. Break it down. All right, then.
Oh, I nailed it.
I hate you.
You know how to do that?
Press the button.
Have you ever done that before?
Press the button.
Oh, I see. I screwed that one up.
Yeah.
Not quite my tempo.
Fuck you, Matt. I don't know how to go through this movie. Oh my god. So,
do you feel like you've been yelled at your mom all day? That's the best way to describe what it's like to watch this movie. Yeah.
So Lindsay went to college. For music education.
As we say in the Midwest, scollage.
No, she went to real school. She went to college for music education and, in the vocal realm. And so part of that is competing.
Yeah.
You know, you take, if you're going to take college level vocal training courses and music theory courses, you're going to compete. There's no way around it. I mean, that's just how you get ahead, and that's how you make a name for yourself. And she had an instructor who hyper-focused on competition and was trying to mold her into being her, into being mold. She was trying to mold Lindsay into being the instructor.
Yeah.
Kind of living vicariously because she saw the talent there, and Lindsay is talented. I'm going to say that, and it's, I am a little biased, of course, but I believe she has a beautiful voice and she has the knowledge. She's out of practice a bit, but the instructor kept telling her, you're wasting your talent in trying to do education. Why would you teach someone else to do something that they can't do when you can do it? You need to do it this way. You're going to do it this way. This is what you're going to do. This is how it is. Fuck you. You're doing it wrong. Blah, blah, blah. All the things that happen in music education. Yep. And Lindsay lost her fire because of this one instructor who berated and killed her desire to teach music.
Yep.
I think part of it is she didn't want to accidentally become the same person, and she didn't want to feel when she was a teacher that she made the wrong decision, which is what this teacher, I think, felt like she should have done competition,
right?
So that is why when we would see it in Redbox or whatever, she would go, you know, give something else. She having seen the trailer, she knew that this would hit really close to home. And it's a shame. I'm glad that it worked out the way that it did, because if not, we never would have met, blah, blah, blah. We had the same anachronistic stuff that we talked about in your life. But I didn't have that experience, so I'm seeing it as a different thing. Watching this movie with her, watching her get upset with some of the things that happened, and in a couple instances, she says, that's music. That's how it goes.
Yep.
And I'm going, how can someone act that way? Because that's how music teachers are.
It's... For those who are bothering to listen to this without having seen Whiplash, the story is about a very toxic relationship between a hardcore music instructor and a student who is mentally broken by how aggressive his teacher is.
I would say that that's only slightly true. This child, this student,
well,
was driven.
He's inspired, but driven, but broken by it.
Yes,
he was. Yeah, I mean, he was broken by it.
Yes.
But he didn't. The fire is confusing. He can't figure out whether to go harder or to quit.
No, he figured. I think he figured that out.
Well, that's the point of the movie.
And not even at the end. I think he had known that. I mean, so the opening shot is this kid drumming like a beast. And I'll tell you what, that didn't sound like drumming to me. He was fucking up.
Okay.
But he was practicing
by
himself. Now. And then you come to find out later, like, this is something that he just does.
Yeah.
He was determined in his own mind to become a great drummer. And he was practicing by himself. Not everyone does that.
Yeah, no.
Not to the fire that this kid was doing in the first place. It's funny,
it reminds me of the fact that I've been playing guitar for 15, I'm doing the math. I think 15 years.
Okay.
And I still sit down for 30 minutes every other day and do super rudimental practice movements.
Do you?
Where you just go, it's on your one hand, you just go, ba-do-do-do-do, and then switch strings, ba-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and then you go all the way down six. So it's 1-4-3-2, 1-4-3-2, 1-4-3-2, 1-4-3-2, and you just keep on going up and down and up and down, and then you start sweeping them, and then you just keep doing it. I do that at least 2 hours a week.
Really?
I've been playing guitar for 15 years. There is not a song I hear that I don't say to myself, I want to learn to play along with that. And I know I can't, I will learn that song by the time I go to bed. Not a single song, except for Dream Theater. That's a whole nother fucking category. We're not going to go there. But that being said, it's obsession. Like, it's a weird mental addiction to making sure that your instrument and you have a flawless symbiotic relationship. And so at least 2 hours a week, I'm sitting in here doing stupid rudiments on these guitars that I really, you could argue as a casual player, why? your foundation is good. It's like, yeah, but it's not good enough. It's obsessive. It's hyper obsessive. Mm-hmm. And that's this kid. I mean, that's the way that he plays. Mm-hmm.
I've never had that. So.
It's a self-abusive relationship. Yes. That's what it is.
Yeah. And I've heard that from other musicians.
It's torture.
Yeah.
I mean, it's torture.
So, you know, he's playing the drums. J.K. Simmons comes up and apparently he's known. I don't know. And he comes up and he listens and the guy, you know, he's like telling him to do certain things. He's playing
basic college courses.
Yeah. And he tells him to do certain things and he starts to do it and he looks up and the guy's gone. Apparently not worth his time. And that was like the first crushing moment that you see for this kid. Like already.
Yeah.
You done fucked up and you're never going to get it back. And you could see how dejected he is. Things happen. And he actually gets a shot. And it's amazing the way that this guy, this music instructor, treats his band. Like, he's nothing without his band, right? And I get that there's some of this personal pride, like, if you're bad, you make me look bad, so I can't have you here. But it's not an instructive thing. It's my expectations are here already, and you better already be there. What are you teaching them then?
It's gulag slave labor.
A little bit. A little bit.
I only want the best rock breakers here. The rest of you go in the pit.
Yep.
And we got shit to build for Stalin, son.
But that's the thing is you're not teaching anything, but you're an instructor.
Yeah, you're in charge. And right. You're in charge of abuse.
I guess. So the first, you know, I kept looking at Lindsay and was like, this is going to go this way. And it did. But the first point where I realized that what I was watching was a narcissist being just the worst asshole possible is when he let the fat kid out of the band when the fat kid wasn't wrong.
Yes.
And the guy who was wrong, who was out of tune, got to stay there.
Yep.
But technically did the same thing.
Yep.
So are all instructors like that? Mine's not, but he's not a pro instructor
so
either.
So here's, this is so hard. How do you train and shape and mold someone whose hobby / profession mm-hmm. / field of study is rooted in obsession?
Okay. Is that a question you're asking me?
How do you do that except by borderline abusive means? It's odd.
No.
I'm not saying
no, no. We're not using this mealy mouth bullshit. This was not borderline obsession or borderline abusive. This was fucking abusive.
This is the
Hold on.
Let me finish the whole thought before you freak out. The only way to shape, mold, and push an obsessive level passion like this is to ride the line between coaching and constructive mm-hmm. and destructive and abusive, because you have to create an extreme form of discipline that fits a pattern.
Yep.
You have to.
I get that.
In other words, I have to hit you with a Dodge Ram pickup truck in order to slightly move your OCD about what you think is right. Right? Mm-hmm. This instructor is the epitome of that. Mm-hmm. Where he is completely off the seesaw and way off the end because he's not looking for adequate. He's looking for pure genius. And that's where it becomes a case study argument in, is that right? Is that wronged? Is he creating more? Is he leaving more dead bodies in his wake than he is propelling successful people forward? And the argument is, yeah.
That's actually interesting because you say dead bodies.
Because the one person he does propel forward in front of him in this film commits suicide because he goes fucking insane.
Yeah.
The whole thesis of the film is how do you create obsessive greatness? Well, you combat it with abusive coaching. I mean, you have to shape and mold it, and in pursuit of greatness, people will fall. Mm-hmm. How many dictators and masters and leaders were dead, murdered, assassinated, died of weird causes before Alexander the Great came about? How many empires fell before Alexander the Great came about? Well, eventually you get to a point of such obsessive leadership and military precision that Alexander the Great can show up and go, I fucking got this, and take over the known world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not without dead bodies in his wake and dead men on the lines around him. It's a very strange thing. But this is the part of it. This is the part of it I want to ask you because you don't get it.
Fuck you. But okay.
You don't because you're not a musician.
I get it.
Yeah, but do you see why people would voluntarily stay in that environment?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
Did you get his struggle to stay or leave?
Yes. Are you asking me to expound upon it?
Yes.
Yeah. So he did it because he knew that this was a vessel that could get him where he wanted to go. And I think instinctually he knew by the breaking down, he knew what was going on. He saw exactly what they were talking about in that last one-on-one that they had in the jazz bar where, you know, some people don't get it that I'm just trying to push to find the greats, to find my great, right? He says that. I think that, I don't remember the kid's name, the actor's name was Miles. I think Miles was, he had that in the back of his mind. He knew he was good enough. He knew he was doing everything right, but he knew that if he wasn't pushed correctly, he would get caught up in his own greatness.
But it devolves too, because then it still is two humans dealing with one another. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the meat of this film is that's two people, like two complete individuals.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I like the bar scene so much, that are trying to still coexist with some semblance of respectful humanity between one another.
And it gets, were it, they though?
It becomes a strange love hate story.
See, because J.K. Simmons' character, again, I can't remember his name either, and I just saw this. He was not. There was nothing I felt that he did that was at all positive or positively reinforcing his band.
So this is where. Oh, this gets so difficult. I disagree.
At what point does he ever say that anything was good?
Never.
Right.
But that's what you have to tell them.
I understand that. I get it. I get that you have to tell them while they're practicing and you have to tell them while they're performing that this is wrong because it's perfectly adequate, but he was looking for the next level. And when you're perfectly adequate, yeah, you might win competitions, but you're never going to propel yourself forward. Even though I'm not technically a musician and I'm not obsessive in that way, I understand that that is what you have to do. There are other ways that you could do it. You don't have to throw a chair. I don't mind the cursing so much, but you don't have to completely berate or fire or get rid of somebody who didn't really do anything wrong, just was so insecure because he's an asshole, right? I mean, that's what happened to Elmer Fudd. Hold on, let me finish my thought. I understand that you have to break them down. But when something is done well, when someone does propel themselves and do something and goes above and beyond, you can give some praise without inflating the ego to that level. I understand that part of his job is to make sure everyone's ego is in check because they're so good that if you give them too much praise, they will become complacent in their own ability and they will become too self-confident.
Well, and that's exactly what happens to the main character.
And never drive themselves sort of, because he's still driving himself forward. You become too complacent and you don't drive because I'm perfectly fine the way I am.
He's driving himself forward in spite of the other person because he believes he's as good as he needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he believes he's properly excelling and he keeps falling short and it becomes a personal conflict instead of an artistic growth conflict.
So here's where that argument breaks down. The scene that I know that's bullshit is the three-way audition. And audition is the wrong word, but that's what it turned into, where it went on until till midnight or 2 a.m. or whatever, between that guy, the guy that was first chair at the old band in the lower level college band, and the core player, the original core player that the main,
he's on his way out.
The main character pretty much stole
his
seat from, which was really interesting.
I've been that guy.
you lost your folder? So when they were trying to do double time swing and they weren't hitting the right tempo, not my tempo, but they were. And it's very evident at the end. They were doing it worse than when they started. Yeah. They were slower than when they started at the very end. And he says, well, you earned your fucking part or whatever. That's how you, that's your part or whatever. It clean the blood. Make sure your alternates clean the blood off my kit is what he said. And I was like, that was the epitome of, I'm not making you any better. I'm making sure you know you've got enough drive. And he was the only one that bled for it, right?
Yes.
So that was probably the only piece of it that was any kind of positive reinforcement. And as soon as that happened, I was like, he didn't actually get the part. Something's going to happen. And something did.
Yeah.
And it's bullshit. And there could have been something more, right? I mean, am I wrong? Am I just not seeing it because I'm not a musician? Or was the only thing that they could do, like, break this kid's hand so he can't play, but he earned his part? Like, that's how bad it was. You could have done that 3 hours ago. What good did that serve besides breaking down the other two?
Well, it reinforces. This is the part. Like, I know how crazy it sounds. I know how stupid and crazy it sounds. It reinforces the tenacious, unrelenting OCD of being a notch better than you are.
I'm surprised.
I know. On the surface, it looks like musicians shouldn't defend any actions in this film. But what's strange is that we can't. Like, we can't.
I mean, I kind of get it. I mean, subjectively, I get it. I'm watching it. I go, I kind of get that. I'm surprised that all three of them stayed in as long as they did. I was waiting for one to quit. And that's what, and I turned to Lindsay and said, they're playing worse now than when they started because they're so exhausted.
Yeah.
So all he's doing, it isn't about the drums. It's not about somebody.
It's an endurance test.
It was never about anybody not hitting it, because I have a feeling they hit it fine from the beginning. They did, all three of them. When he switched through all three of them, I think they were all fine. They did it fine. It was a who wants it the most.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah. And I'm surprised nobody quit in that scene. I thought for sure Connolly, the guy.
But you have to remember, too, that these are the best of the crop. They're not going to relent to one another. The people who weren't invited would have relented to one another.
Yeah. I mean, I get that.
Yeah.
But again, when you're talking about a session that starts at 9 p.m., and at 1 a.m., they're still doing the same 30 seconds at a time or whatever. It's incredibly insane, difficult drum roll. This is basically what it is, right? Or drum fill. And they were sweating, and the one kid was bleeding. Like, one of them had to have given out, and they didn't. I was fully expecting for at least one of them to go, fuck you, and I quit, and it would have been the new kid. And then it came down to the two, and when he started bleeding, I knew he'd win it, because he showed that he'll bleed for the part.
Yeah.
I get that that was the point. But even after that, there was no real positive reinforcement besides...
No, not any.
Yeah. How do you as an... You've not been... under an instructor like that, I would assume, for some time.
Not for some time. Yeah. But, I mean, you do it to yourself. There's no reward in being able to hit a guitar lick perfect.
Mm-hmm. Besides your own...
I got it. I did it. Like, that's it. It's like the first time... the most recent example I have is that... Heir Apparent is a song by Opeth. Crazy heavy song. And they brought a new guitarist in for that album, who was a shredder, like face melter. And I could play all of Opeth's discography, every single song they'd ever written ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on par or better than the guitar players who were in that band, except for acoustic, because Michael Eckerfeldt's a freak machine. And I don't play acoustic or classical. But when it came to electric, there was nothing I couldn't play by Opeth. And then the very first heavy song on this album called Watershed, he hits this guitar solo. And it's this new guitar player. And it's like, what in the fuck did I just hear? That's not humanly possible. I spent 3 days not sleeping to learn how to play that guitar solo.
Uh-huh.
I'm not in Opeth. I'm not playing Opeth cover songs. I'm not going to play that and show anybody that I can play that heir apparent guitar solo just to show off. But at the end of 3 days, I played along at speed, 100% match speed, mm-hmm. and hit it note for note. And I turned off the sound, and I put my guitar in the rack, and I fucking went to bed. And that's it. There's no positive reinforcement involved to make me feel complete. The process is over.
Mm-hmm.
It's done. The lack of tension, the lack of stress, and the lack of failure is in itself enough. Because you have to remember that being a musician is being able to flawlessly execute in the moment, on the moment, do not miss. The only thing that you have as positive reinforcement is completing your job correctly in the moment. If I get an award 3 minutes after I'm done playing the song, it doesn't mean a fucking thing. That's the weird part that people don't understand. And this is where I actually am very empathetic or I identify with athletes.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if I got the Heisman. Did I catch the fucking ball?
Okay. I get that.
The ball is in the air now. I need to catch the ball now. I need to run, juke, and dodge now. Who gives a fuck if you say good job a week later?
Right.
So.
But that's not true for this movie, because this kid's aspirations and driving forces are beyond the moment. He has a far-reaching goal.
To be able to perfectly execute in the moment and be renowned for it. It's different. It's not because he wants to be on the poster. It's not because he wants to be. It's he wants to sit down and be that actively flawless, like Buddy Rich and Steve Gadd mm-hmm. and Dave Weckl and all these other amazing drummers. It's the ability to sit down and execute as part of your natural ability. It's not the accolades and Ferraris and celebrations and CD covers. Like it really isn't. It's mm-hmm. all secondary. This is why I get really irritated with Rockstar Syndrome. Mm-hmm. This is why I think Five Finger Death Punch can go fuck itself. It's not about the rest of it. It's not. The humility is in the fact that you could flawlessly execute. It's over. It's done. Go home. Get a drink of water. Go home.
Right.
More musicians suffer from depression because there is no immediate celebration or gratification like most people are familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very strange relationship. This is first person. I'm sure that there are a whole bunch of people who live and die on the fact of being on magazine covers. I went to high school with one. He's now the lead singer of Black Veil Brides, and he's a complete fuck, and that's all he's ever cared about. We went to school and played music at the same time.
Uh-huh.
He's living this weird magazine cover fantasy where I'm still concerned with my artistic integrity. I know him directly. I'm telling you, he's a false fuck. It's fine. It's my opinion, right? He's got his millions of dollars.
Put this out on the podcast?
No, I don't mind.
Okay.
He's got his millions of dollars, and he's got everything that he wants, but it's fine. He achieved his goal.
Yeah.
But the driving force behind the two is completely independent. It's the difference between the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra and Kiss.
I get it. I get that to a point. But on the other end, you know, Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra, maybe I should stop drinking. They have their own accolades. They wouldn't be there if they weren't a bit renowned, if they weren't as good as they say they are. They're driving to continue to be able to do what they do.
Yes.
I've wondered this about musicians, especially symphony and big band and jazz musicians who don't have rock star syndrome. They're not doing, they may be a career musician.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's...
But they don't make that kind of money. And then what do you do when you lose it a little bit? What do you do with that once you're, you know, say your band disbands, I guess is the right word, yeah. Or breaks up. You know, what do you do next?
You move on to the next place to execute.
I guess the next gig?
Yeah. You have to... It's a perspective thing too, because the best way I can explain, people ask me what I love about guitar, and guitar is where my soul talks the easiest.
Mm-hmm.
When I sit and play a guitar, that's how my soul talks. Like it's the only way I can get people to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I can make it sing the way that I need it to, right? With drums, I'm getting there, but it's not quite there. It's not as emotive as I would like it to be. It can be, but my drum skills aren't there yet. That's how I talk. This rack of guitars is how I can talk.
Mm-hmm.
And the inability to say what I need to say would make me go fucking crazy. So part of it's just the cathartic getting it the hell out of my system.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is the active ability, right? The reward system of being able to perform, like being able to make the statement now. There's no skill, there's no flub note, there's no mistake.
Mm-hmm.
The accolades, yeah, there's really not a lot wrong with moving to the next gig. I don't, it hurts. Like, it hurts your ego, it hurts your source, it's concerning, but it's like leaving one job for another job.
Mm-hmm.
Your seniority's gone and it's kind of scary, but you're just on to the next thing. I don't know how to explain it. It's entrenching all of those concepts into something that you take extremely personal.
And that's another thing is you personally drive yourself because you want to, for this one thing, you want to be able to execute. For this one thing, you want perfection. And once you're done with that, you're okay with that and you'll move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
But that's not how you make your living. And that was never, I don't want to say never, that's not your goal at this time. Due to some life circumstances, right? I'm not saying that you wouldn't say no to getting accolades and becoming a career musician, but that's not what you do, and that's not what you're going to do unless something extravagant happens. But this kid's driving force was he wanted to be a career musician known for this particular skill set, known for this particular genre.
He attacked the epitome.
Right, yeah.
And I love it. It's hard.
It's tough.
It's obsessive. It's unhealthy. And it's so hard to see someone be that unhealthy and go, yeah, man. I get it.
The other, granted, this was focused on one person, but I felt like the other members of the band were driven by being hired by Lincoln Center to become a pit orchestron.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a jazz, fill in, or a jazz musician full time.
When they talk about the prestige that comes with that stuff,
mm-hmm.
the prestige isn't just in the title and in the position. Mm-hmm. It's that your skill has been honed enough to be there.
Right. Oh, I get that.
The prestige is personal.
Yeah. It wasn't about awards. It was about getting a job doing what you love.
Right.
In a very crowded and difficult place to thrive.
Yes.
You have rock stars who come out because of a particular song that they do that makes it big, and maybe they can follow it up, and maybe they can follow that up, and then they become a rock star, right? You have jazz musicians, which are a lot less prominent, right? They're much more niche. Frederick. But again, they've got their own circles, and all they're looking for is the ability to do what they love for a living.
Yeah.
The same thing with concert musicians. But that was their driving factor, was they wanted to be the people that can make a living doing what they do. I don't think that this kid, I don't remember his name, the main character, I don't think that he would have been happy just getting a job playing music.
No, that was why he quit. That's why he quit.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly it.
So he gave up on it entirely on his happiness because somebody beat him down so bad.
Yep.
And that's okay?
No.
That's what I'm trying to get at. You're saying that J.K. Simmons' behavior in this, Terrence was the character's name, his behavior was okay.
No,
but
he's the furthest end. He is the furthest end of regimented and aggressive. The furthest, most extreme.
So the end of the movie.
But looking back on it, I think you're right. I think that the clash between those two, mm-hmm. personal for the kid, not personal for the instructor.
I would agree with that until the end.
Yeah. Fuck you. You're faceless. You can fail. I don't care. But until you pass, I'm going to keep on driving you into the ground.
But he did care.
At the end.
They just, no, even in the beginning. I feel like that's something that's missed there. He cared enough to yell at these children to tell
yes.
these
and young people. And that's the part of it where I have such a hard time saying that he's wrong.
Yeah.
I do. I have a hard time saying it out loud. Like,
he cared
I
enough to fire Elmer Fudd or fire yep. or cut Elmer Fudd because Elmer Fudd didn't know that he was out of tune.
Elmer Fudd
and wasn't out of tune.
Elmer Fudd wasn't even confident enough to combat it.
Right. He didn't know the difference, and that's just as bad. That was exactly how it comes off.
Yeah.
And somebody else was out of tune, and that was bad.
It's like, you fix your shit.
But he was given a pass, even though he was wrong. And it was I understand that there's a care there. He is trying to mold these children or these young adults, and they need to be able to do this. And if they can't come off as confident, if they don't know, they'll never make it in the real world in this profession. So go get your dinky little lower prestige music degree and go flip burgers somewhere, because that's what's going to happen. That's how that comes off.
Yeah.
I understand that. I get it. There's a thin line, and just as you've said, between driving someone and abuse.
And destroying someone.
And destroying someone.
Yeah.
This kid is the one out of 1,000 that has to be destroyed in order to achieve. And then once he does that, it becomes something different. It becomes something, it's recasting the mold or a phoenix. He really did have to completely quit and come back to it. I get it. It's just, that can't be how it always is.
Yeah.
It can't be.
My favorite example of humility in this, for me personally, actually, and this is a funny movie to put it in perspective, is that abject failure is more important on the growth experience.
Please say Waterboy.
No. The fact that his parents are supportive of his passion. Now, it's a weird thing. I'm not
his dad, you mean?
But yeah, by any measure, am I saying my parents never supported me as a guitarist,
mm-hmm.
but they never celebrated me ever. My parents didn't go around saying, oh yeah, our son's a guitar wizard, right? Our son knows how to write and make music. They're like, oh, our son's in a band. Like, that was the extent of it. Our son's in a band. We buy him guitar strings. It keeps him out of trouble.
You act like that's not what happened here.
No. It's not. It honestly isn't.
That is what happened here.
No, his parents are more constructive than even mine were. Not that my parents ever detracted. Okay.
We'll come back to that in a second. Go ahead and finish your thought.
One of the most humbling things I ever had happen in my entire music career is after playing guitar for 10 years, going on tour, recording stuff, like building a studio, doing all of it, is my mom goes, hey, you play bass, right?
The answer to that is no.
Okay, so if it wasn't...
I'm sure it could be, I could.
I just laughed. But it's funny because sometimes I remember that oppressive, weird, hilarious moment of how many times did my mom drive me to band practice? How many guitars has my mom helped me buy or picked up off the porch because I ordered them on the internet? Like, how many pedals have I bought? How many times has she driven me to Guitar Center? Not Bass Center, Guitar Center. And 10 years deep. 10 years deep, it is such a small blip on her radar. You play the bass, right?
Some form of guitar, right?
But it's so funny to me that if you asked me what my most inspiring moments were as a musician, it's all negative stuff. It's all negative stuff. And that moment almost always comes in at number one. Like, it's really, really weird. It's really strange.
Hmm.
So there's something to be said about a negative constructive pattern in some of these things. And I don't...
But that's where that self-driving, self-obsessive comes from, right?
And that's why I have a real...
it's a personality type as well.
It is. And it's funny because I have no respect, none, for people who have gone through the same obsessive experience of learning how to play an instrument like mm-hmm. this and then are arrogant and are flashy and are boisterous about it.
Okay.
I have no respect for someone who does that.
So someone I think of when I think of guitar...
because there's no humility in it.
When I think of guitar, somebody I think of as arrogant and flashy, maybe not boisterous, that could be incorrect. And it could just be a persona thing versus their actual personality. Slash.
Disagree. Now.
Now, I don't know a whole lot.
Yeah, it's Slash is an amazing guitar player.
Yes.
He is never braggy about it. People are braggy on his behalf.
Okay, so that might be the difference.
It's a perception issue. Slash is a super, super humble guy. He gets associated with Axl Rose, who is the exact opposite of the spectrum, and they immediately associate the qualities across the two. Slash is a very nice and super humble guy. He's actually not the greatest rock guitarist ever, and he'll tell you straight out.
I don't think he is, but I think he's great.
You know who the king of musicians' humility is? Honestly, is fucking Prince. We've talked about it a million times. Prince could play any guitar player on earth under the fucking table. Period. Most people never knew he played guitar unless he showed up on stage with that crazy Prince-looking guitar.
Yes.
And he would only do simple things. He was a murderer. He was a straight murderer.
You're talking about the music.
On the guitar.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at how much he has in writing credit. I mean, he was a musician's musician that didn't... people didn't realize because he wrote how much out there has his name on it.
An unbelievable amount.
And not his stuff. You know, he wrote jazz. He wrote pop. He wrote rock. And he did all of it.
You hear things like Purple Rain and Kiss and When Doves Cry. And then you realize, oh, he's a master guitarist. Like, he's a master. He's the epitome. Yeah. And he just doesn't. He doesn't.
I was expecting you to say somebody like Clapton or something like that.
Frampton.
Peter Frampton.
Clapton is another person who's unbelievable and everybody else gives him the credit and accolades on his behalf.
And I like Clapton. I'll never be able to play like him.
The one person who gets overly celebrated, and it does drive me crazy, is Jimmy Page. Jimmy Page has he's like Lars Ulrich. He's the worst drummer ever, but he's in Metallica, so you don't talk shit.
Yeah.
Except now everyone's starting to talk shit. Jimmy Page is...
I wouldn't say that.
Jimmy Page is a horrendously sloppy guitar player.
Okay.
Who steals a lot of his riffs, and they've been caught for that, and they've been caught doing traditional riffs and then just releasing it as a Led Zeppelin item. Jimmy Page has gotten progressively worse with his age, and it has a lot to do with the fact that he's developed quite an ego that he can't deal with as a musician. Lars Ulrich is the same. Lars Ulrich needs drum lessons. I'll say it. It's a fact. I mean... Dave Lombardo is the same age as Lars Ulrich, and Dave Lombardo is a master rock, metal, and jazz musician. Lars Ulrich is lucky if he can play four on the floor. He doesn't have a fucking ride cymbal. He's gone through a 30-some-odd year career with Metallica and has never had a ride cymbal. Because he doesn't know how to emote with a drum set. So
He just does... timing for everyone else. I get you.
And poorly.
And I don't know enough about that to be able to comment on it. Now, I want to talk about the end of the movie before we take our last break, because that's going to be when we grade it and whatnot. The end of the movie. So he quits. Well, he was gone his way to a concert. He had won the part. He finally won the part. Something happened. His bus broke down, so he ended up having to rent a car. He left his sticks at the rental place. He gets to the show. They're like, where are your sticks? Da da da. He says, I'll be back in 10 minutes. He drives, goes, gets sticks, comes back, gets hit by a car.
Boom, T-bone. That's where you text me, fuck you, the first time.
That's the fuck you, the first text that I sent you. He still shows up.
I would.
I understand that. Yeah. I mean, I get it. I do. It's tough, but he still shows up. He gets on stage. He starts to play, and he fucks up because he's injured, right?
He just got T-boned by a fucking dump truck.
And he looks like he got in a car accident. Nothing from his instructor saying, dude, you cannot play this. You are hurt.
Nope, he lets him do it.
He lets him do it, lets him fuck up and fail. And when he does fuck up and fail, he calls him out on it, which is bullshit. That's bullshit number one. That's my biggest problem. You should have, as a teacher, You should have stepped in and said, I understand your drive.
Yeah.
Somebody, and I get why you want to do this, but somebody physically has to play for you and you need to go to the hospital.
That's the seesaw too far to
that's
justify.
That's where he... I could be on board with every... including throwing chairs and bullshit and including that god-awful practice session where he bled for it.
Yeah.
I could be on board for that. When he shows up looking like he got in a car accident because he got in a fucking car accident and he was allowed to get on stage.
Yep.
And he started... The music started and... When he screwed up, it was basically, you're cut, not... Now, part of me gets that he was given a choice beforehand,
yeah.
But that is some extenuating circumstances if ever there were any.
What I love, and I know you haven't graded it,
mm-hmm.
You are so into this.
I'm so passionate
about
it.
And you're so passionate that you're forgetting some of the parts of this film that make it an artistic interpretation as a film. And I love, like, you're treating this like, what the fuck is this teacher doing? Like, you are so up in arms.
I'm forgetting the fact that this was a written story.
And it's a shitty, shitty, shitty thing for me to do to your opinion right now.
Yeah.
Because I'm defending that insanity. I've been defending it for 66 minutes.
Yeah. So you're basically saying, you're on board with me, but fuck you, because this is just a story. You know that, right?
Right.
But no, I mean...
But his brand of insanity, mm-hmm. His brand of finding the perfection, this is where it lands, right? I know, I...
To the point where he was physically incapable and needed attention, and he still stuck it out.
Yeah.
The instructor did the wrong thing by allowing him to do so and then firing him from the position because of it. But that discouraged him to the point where he quit music. I don't think they actually say it, but he did not go back to music school.
No, they explicitly show. He goes to...
Oh, wait. Yeah, he got expelled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he quit. He is allowed to change programs if he testifies against the teacher.
Yeah.
So he changes majors.
Yeah.
He gets to retain his college enrollment, and then he gets an outside job to keep up all of his free time.
So he comes across the guy in a bar. He's doing jazz, and part of him's like, fuck this guy, he's still playing music and I'm not. And you see it on his face. Yeah. And they have a heart-to-heart, and they have the, you know, I was only looking for one of the greats, and people don't understand that. That whole soliloquy, right? He basically manipulates and cons this kid into showing up for a jazz festival so that he can have his revenge.
And embarrass him.
But did he, or was he still trying to drive this kid?
Oh, when he introduces and tells him, hey, you'll just be playing the standards, man. Caravan, Whiplash.
You'll know, you've already known it, yep. And we want somebody who already knows it. And the kid smells something
and they,
funny,
they
come and he in, says, why don't you get Connolly? Why don't you get Tanner?
Yeah, they come in with a 15, they come in with a 15/16 like fusion piece, and he thinks they're starting Caravan. And it's like, dude, there ain't no way. If you don't know you're walking into this, you're not going to be able to count this.
Right.
There's no way. And I think what's weird, that's the low point. Of all the things to quit, to give up, to go against the teacher, to all the stuff, the absolute low point of the film is when he runs off the stage and goes, are you fucking kidding me? This is a long-term revenge, long con. I got fucked. I let my guard down. I already quit. I unquit and came back.
And then was humiliated at an actual event.
The peak of humiliation.
Yes.
Peak of the bottom of the bottom. Completely broken and needs to be great now. That's the moment. It wasn't when he showed up after the car crash. And I can tell you because I know what the emotional roller coaster this film feels like as a musician. And that's the moment. If he was going to quit forever and rebel against drums and think all drummers are fucks and all jazz is fucked and that man needs to be shot in the head and all that stuff, that's it.
When he got screwed by not knowing his music and not having any sheet music.
To be broken and then seek catharsis and then be fucked in your catharsis seeking, that's it. That's the bottom.
Because it's implied, and you tell me if this is correct. Had he had the sheet music to whatever the name of that song was.
He would have failed.
You think he would have failed?
Yes, immediately.
You think so?
Yes.
You don't think that he would have been able to follow the music at least enough to give a passable performance.
Better than what happened, yes, Passable? No.
No. Okay.
I think it was a complex time.
Okay.
If you listen to that piece, it's like seven. It's like a 7/8 that moves into like a 5/4, or it's like a 15/16. Okay. It's very hard.
They made it seem like his issue was that he didn't have the music, so he couldn't have even followed along if he wanted.
He couldn't have tried. He was set up completely to fail.
Okay.
Having the music there is a way to clue you into the fact that he's just fucked.
So what ends up happening is he leaves. He gets back to his father, who's backstage, who realizes what he was just set up for. And something just...
Yep.
I don't know what it was, but you could just see it in his head. It just went... And he went, fuck that, I'm going back out there.
And he goes, it's from the bottom, and it's like a fucking Saturn V rocket to the top.
That's what it is. He goes, I'm as great as you say I'm not. Just because I sat in this chair with no idea that this was going to happen and I failed.
Still won't quit, bitch.
Not just that. I'm good enough for that. You can't fault me for this thing that you didn't allow me to prepare for. Yeah. Let me show you out of my own head how good I am.
Yeah.
So he does Whiplash, and Whiplash is fine. Does he do Whiplash first?
It's Caravan. It's a solo that goes into Caravan.
He sits back down, he starts a solo, and everybody's kind of looking at him, and he says, I'll count you in, and he does. And then it starts Caravan. Caravan ends, and he doesn't stop playing. And he does that solo for, 2 minutes?
It's long.
Straight? Yeah. And then J.K. Simmons gets it.
Yeah.
Like, at first he was like, fuck you.
Yeah.
And then it was, oh, I did, this is one of the greats.
It's happening.
This is the guy. And then you see him get like this, I don't want to, you see this like visible emotional boner come out.
Yeah.
Like everybody can see, I just got a hard-on in my heart for this child, for this young adult. You understand what I'm saying?
No, I get it.
And he's like, this, the firing, the fact that you got me fired, because he knew that.
We did it. This is worth it. We did it. Yeah, we did it. We won.
Even though J.K. Simmons will not be remembered.
We are the champions.
Only better drumming.
So I want to ask.
That was where double fuck you comes from.
Yeah.
Was when he. Do we even want to do a last break?
No, we'll do another break because we got to talk about it. The one thing I wanted to ask you about as a non-musician, the drum pantomiming in this movie, could you tell when it was happening?
When it was faked?
Yes.
A couple of times, but not often.
It is damn tough. It's tough. Now, I can find it because I know what I'm looking at and listening to. This is some of the best fake musicianship I've seen in a movie, or the replacement. They got made sure that the drummer they got had matching hands and the makeup and the fingers were the right length. And they did a really good job casting the double. And then the shots where they cannot show you the intricate drumming, they just show you Miles' face and what he's doing and some of his larger body movements. The musical choreography in this film, for the star actor not being that caliber of musician, is untouchably good.
Now,
it's noticeable. The
actor is a musician.
Yes, and he can play drums, and he's a good drummer.
Yes.
The stand-in they had do is a world-class jazz drummer. Yes. So,
I get that.
But the pantomiming, the musical, the fake choreography they did is next tier good. It's next level good in this
because movie. You still have to learn that timing. Now, you can do you can do some
it's
some
timing
tricks.
And body placement.
Right. Yeah. You can do some tricks. You can slow the film down in order to be able to speed it up to 30 frames per second. So that at 30 frames per second, it actually looks like he's making that.
They really didn't do a lot of that, though.
They did a little bit. I can tell you where they did it was what I noticed, the very first audition with the three drummers.
Yes. Yeah, there's some slowdowns.
You can tell that was sped up in order to make it look like they were hitting that double swing time. And I'll tell you, I didn't know that that was a thing, and I looked it up after.
Oh.
That's one of the most difficult things you can do with drums.
Yeah. So
and they were making college kids do this.
It's the next impossible rudiment.
Right.
It's next to impossible.
At the tempo that he was asking for, not at my tempo. That's because your tempo is for aliens who have four hands, because this is impossible. Some bullshit. Yeah, there was a couple times when I realized that that wasn't the actor, but it was done so seamlessly. It wasn't jarring. It wasn't, you couldn't tell unless you were looking for it. And I knew you would ask that.
Yeah, I knew. I wanted to see if you could tell. And you can, but it's damn good.
Yeah. There was another shot that was a aerial shot above the drum on the last concert that you could tell that wasn't him.
Yeah, when his blood's hitting the cymbal, it doesn't match up, but it's just so that you can see the effect of the blood dripping around the cymbal.
So awesome.
All right, any other points before we go to the last break here?
I wanted to cry.
We'll come back and talk about that.
Okay. Yeah, we will then. Let me just get this out of the way. A+. A+.
It's so good.
It was a great movie. It was great. It was great. It was an emotional ride. I would recommend it to anybody that is seriously considering music. I would recommend it to anybody that likes jazz music. I would recommend, and I like jazz, but I don't know jazz. So that's interesting that these are some standards.
Yeah.
That I didn't know.
I actually recommend it to anybody who likes a good sports movie too.
Yep.
Because the idea of failure, rebuilding.
It's a hero's journey.
It totally
very much is, because he has a resurrection in the middle and everything.
Yep.
So getting that out of the way, I resent my mom allowed me to quit band in sixth grade.
Whoa! This hit you in your soul, sir.
Mm-hmm. My mom allowed me to quit band in sixth grade, and it's because I didn't practice. And I didn't practice because it was sixth grade.
Yeah.
And nobody told me to practice, and there was not a whole lot of interest.
That's how I knew I was never going to be a full-time saxophonist.
Mm-hmm.
I refused to practice saxophone, but you could not make me put my guitar away.
Gotcha. I resent being allowed to quit. What should have happened, my mom didn't have any money, so she didn't rent the instrument. She had to go to my school and say, I can't afford it. My son wants to play. What I really wanted to play was drums.
Yeah.
But in order to play drums, you had to audition for drums just to have the ability to do so. And I did not audition. I don't remember if I was out that day or if I was sick or something. I missed the time. And so I picked saxophone instead. And my mom, us not having any money, instead of renting the instrument, she had went to my school and said, look, my son wants to do this. We are poor. Here's our financials. What can we do? Can we get some kind of reduce? And what they did was they had a loaner. They said, you get through sixth grade, we'll talk about it next year. You get through that year, we'll talk about it again. And at some point, we can't do this forever, but at some point, you have to show the interest.
Yeah.
So
what instrument?
Saxophone.
Okay.
Alto sax. So she did so, and I went to band practices and stuff, and I'm pretty, even with guitar, I can pick it up and I can do it. I can do whatever we practiced on, and I might not pick it up again until my next practice, but I'll pick it up that day and practice for an hour or two before I go to my instructor. And I'm just as good as I was the last week.
Yeah.
I didn't lose anything. I may not have gained anything on my own. That's my failing. That's what I was doing with band or with the saxophone. I would pick it up and I would do what I did during band practice, and that's fine. But I wouldn't go home and practice with it. I was not encouraged to do so because we lived in an apartment complex and my mom didn't want to hear it. And our neighbors didn't want to hear it. Honestly, that was an excuse that we had. I resent the fact that my mom didn't force me to practice because she was humiliated to do so. What she should have done is not allowed me to quit and perhaps not force me to practice and let me make a fool of myself in front of everyone. And when I did that, I would have either...
Or arrange extra time for you after school to use the school to practice.
Or that. That was less of a possibility, but that's for different reasons. And so either I would have been humiliated into doing better, which is a factor of mine. I was so used to being... I was one of the smartest kids in my school, right? If there was, I was a B, C student because I was smart enough and I didn't do any of my homework. So
yeah. Oh my God. That's my boat to find.
Yep. So I would get A pluses on tests and Fs on homework. So that equated to a C or a B. So that failure of me being humiliated in this class or in a concert would have pushed me to either play or give it up completely and never feel one way or another about it. So I resent that fact. I resent also the fact that I wanted to do some kind of music other than singing and had, besides band in high school, had no other outlet. Like, I wanted to pick up guitar. I asked my mom, how do we make this happen? And we're too poor. You'll never be a guitar player. And so that's part of the reason why now I have a guitar and I'm taking lessons. Yeah. So
it's so, I just had a thought shoot through my head. Mm-hmm. It's all of the struggles that a student athlete or a professional athlete goes through. Mm-hmm. But at the end, you create art.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same struggle with the result that the rest of humanity gets to enjoy at the end.
I would say that.
And I feel like when you get robbed in the fashion that you did, I almost feel like the fall is harder.
I'm not looking for pity in that story.
No, but
by the way, but, and I am also not trying to push any blame to my mom. She did the best she could with what she had.
Right.
And she's not a musician and she doesn't care about music and she didn't know what to do with the situation.
It's one of those moments where you look back and go, oh, well, that sucked.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. This is totally me saying, I wish it would have went differently because I think knowing what I know now, that if it would have happened this way then, this would have happened instead. And so I don't want to make it seem like I'm like calling her out. She did what she could. She didn't know how important it really was to me. I didn't tell her. I don't think I really knew until years later when I realized what an opportunity I'd missed. But you said you equate it to sports without the artistic creation. I get that, but I'll tell you, sports can be artistic creation.
Not arguing that it can't.
Okay.
Sorry. No, oh my God. There are some sports things that you see and you're like, how in the world, in human ability, is that a moment that we all just got to, like, when
that's
the Cubs
why we
just
have
took the World
highlight
Series.
Reels.
Yeah. Oh my Lord.
Even when we're talking about,
well, like mixed martial arts. Yeah. Sometimes you see something so genius and amazing, you're like, whoa.
Let me tell you the thing that came to my head when you did it. First of all, any 100-yard run for a touchdown.
Yeah.
I mean, that's beauty in motion.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Or a comedy of errors, one or the other. The other thing that comes to my mind when you say that, as non-sports as this is, Undertaker versus Mick Foley Mankind,
Hell in a Cell, yep.
When Foley gets thrown off the top of the cell through the announcer table.
100% agree.
That, my friend, and the fact that he gets up, missing a tooth, well, with a tooth in his nose, and is still in character and finishes the scripted fight, the semi-scripted fight that they have.
Yeah.
That, sir, is art.
Yeah. Oh, no, I am not disagreeing that physical... You know, I got a huge, huge Fallout-level argument with a friend of mine. He's a full-time artist. And I posted, there's a spoken word poetry piece called 21.
Mm-hmm.
And it's someone counting up from 0 to 21, or counting down. I gotta rewatch it, but at each age they talk about a benchmark of their life and their standards and what it meant to be that age and how their parents reacted to who they were becoming and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot about how they came out to their father and their family and how everyone reacted,
which I'm guessing they did when they were 21.
21 I think is the age they were when they gave the presentation.
Oh, okay.
And I believe that they count backwards.
Okay.
And he counts backwards through the hatred all the way back to a very innocent time where he kind of reveals like his dad was probably despicable the whole time anyway.
Mm.
And that even despite that, he lived that way his whole life. Look it up. Spoken word poetry is called 21. It's amazing. I posted that on Facebook and I said, this is art. This is the epitome of human experience. It doesn't matter if it's music, words, a punch. It doesn't matter how you express, but this is the part of living every day that makes it worth waking up to me. Mm-hmm. And my art friend really took offense that I called the word punch a form of art, to which all of my all of my MMA friends immediately lost their shit about. And like, you are so horribly incorrect that I don't even want to discuss it with you.
Right.
It was relatively intense. it was a very heavy argument, but it devolved to the point that person to this day still really doesn't talk to me a whole lot. It's a compounding a bunch of other issues.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't discount art from any particular medium. But a guy who throws a football is really not thinking about the long-term inspirational implications of whether or not the receiver gets it or not.
No. But again,
it's a different sphere.
But that same argument that you had just made 15 minutes ago in the moment.
Some fuckhead playing Wonderwall at a party to get laid also is equally less artistic.
Well, sure, of course. But you had made the mention of it's all about what's in the moment and being able to perform in the moment.
Absolutely.
Because it is a moment-to-moment
Absolutely.
Thing. And sports more so, but there are definitely artistic pieces to it, both in body movement and the fact that you have these, like I said, that's where the highlight reel comes from.
100,000,000%.
I was never very sporty, so none of that makes any sense to me.
For myself, it's a mature opinion. I would have never agreed to that 5 years ago. 5 years ago, I would have said, if you're trying to tell me that football is art, then go fuck yourself. And it's not.
But you know what? Fair. And the first thing I would say in response to that, and this is just because I like playing devil's advocate, is ballet art.
Yeah. So
is dance art?
That was the argument that I made when they said violent aggression against another human can never be art. And I'm like, what about if you're doing a ballet and you do violent movements at your partner to show conflict?
Yep.
It's the same fucking thing.
The difference is one's written and one's not. One's reactionary and
one's reactionary, one's interpreted, one's choreographed, one's natural. Like, it's the same fucking
same movement.
Thing. It's the same. That's where I the argument almost died. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if you can't appreciate that mixed martial arts is art, mm-hmm. I can't defend your opinion if you can't counter argue that. Like, violence does not immediately make art moot. It just doesn't. It doesn't.
I would say. And I'm keeping to the football side because I can't speak on the fighting thing.
Go for it.
But you can technically have a male, female, doesn't matter, ballet dancer make a 100-yard run using the same moves as they would in ballet, and it would be a highlight reel for the end of time because they're never touched or whatever. They do all the right spins and all the right jumps at the right... You know, you put a football player, do those same moves, and it's fine. That's where that art, that sports is not art argument falls away. I'm not a sports guy. I care less.
Here's where the argument is very interesting, mm-hmm. is art is not sports. when you flip it the other way, that's when this relationship is one directional.
That's not true.
Often one directional.
I would say two instances where art is sport, competition.
I agree. That's applying. So competition doesn't count as sport. It's odd. This is one of those things I'm still struggling with, but carry on.
So competition, and you have multiple teams facing off against the trophy. Yeah, there's not any physical confrontation, but you're still equating skill versus skill. Whoever's better is going to win that.
I consider competition versus sport much different.
Okay. But I would say, you could even have that in a, would you say that sport, what makes it sport is the fact that you can do this in a in a friendly, it's still competitive, but a friendly, like a pickup game. That's what makes it sport. Because you can do that with music.
No.
And you can play off.
I define sport as something that's athletically driven as an entertainment item. Competition.
Okay, athletically driven. I can tell you right now, I'm not athletic enough to play the guitar in a way that you can play the guitar.
You are. It's not, but that's the thing. Playing of guitar is not limited by athletic ability. It's limited by dexterity and skill. That's the difference.
No, but that dexterity and skill is still an athletic ability. I have not trained my muscles. I have not train my hand not to hurt when I make certain chord changes. That's where the sport comes from.
It's not the same as...
It's not that I can't do it. It's that I can't do it.
I still can't draw the parallel between that and two guys playing hockey against one another.
You're allowed to be wrong.
No, I just disagree. I don't find two guys in a hockey match to be the same as two guys in a guitar off. Like, it's not the same to me.
I get what you're saying.
It's a full-bodied athletic skill versus a honed specific particular skill. I just don't.
So that's where I'm a little, like, let's take hockey.
It's,
you have specific roles.
It's complete. It's complete.
You have people, hold on. You have people who cannot play a lick of hockey, who are on a team specifically to be an enforcer, to be goon, right? You have people who are not fast and not good at fighting and not good at defense, who are specifically on the ice because they can make a snipe shot. That is one specific skill that they're on a team for.
Right, but it's an overall full-bodied effort of Team A against Team B.
So drumming is, you can have a drum off and that would be athletic, that would be a sport.
No.
Because that's a full body.
I disagree. It's points. I think honestly, it sounds so stupid, but it comes down to the ability to score points. Being
so
able,
gymnastics isn't a skill.
No,
or
I don't.
I
believe that gymnastics is an artistic competition. I don't believe that gymnastics is a sport.
I gotcha.
Because you're on a scale of 1 to 10.
So it's a measurable.
It's a measurable thing, but it's based on a routine, right? It's based on a skilled set routine. Well,
right, and that's also subjective. So what you're saying is there has to be something measurable. Points.
Needs to be something
or
measurable.
Or distance or something of that nature.
Yeah, I don't find it to be, because in a drum off, it's going to be a mix of entertainment value, which is an odd item. Rudimentary skill, right? Are you executing a double paradiddle over singles? Like, are you doing that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
And are you interweaving it to the rest of your thing? Well, are you utilizing your kit correctly? Mm-hmm. Are your actual physical motions correct? Are you moving slow and fluid, or are you beating it like you're chopping wood? But ultimately what you're crafting there is a performance that is then weighted against someone else's entertainment and skill-based performance. You're not immediately sniping each other ping pong style for points.
I get you.
Right? It's not as measurable and calculated, and it's also not as physically, you're not physically combating against one another to make a goal or something like that happen. Mm-hmm. You're isolated and you're an individual that's being ranked among other individuals.
I gotcha.
I don't even necessarily consider, as much as it's, golf is not necessarily or essentially a sport. I actually put that more, that falls in the middle in a very weird area.
That has a score and it's measurable.
It falls in a very weird center ground because that's more of a mental sport than anything else. Right? And that's where I would put that more on par with something like chess. I would put golf closer with chess than I would put it with a drumming competition or with football.
I would disagree only because I can't physically hit the ball correctly.
That's where the physicality does come in and there's honed skills. So yes. That's where it does lean more toward a sport.
Mm-hmm.
But I see it more as a mental.
I get what you're saying as well, because it is all about how well do you know the course and know what to do in this situation.
Yeah, and there's a difference in sport versus art of the actual, and that's the best way to put it. You're ranking the individual skills and performance of an individual against what others have accomplished. You're not immediately clashing against one another for a physical result. I don't, if that makes any sense.
It does. As soon as you said measurable, or as soon as we came to that conclusion, now I understand what you're talking about, because there's nothing, there's a technical side of music and music competition that you can go, well, did he technically do it? And that's a measurable skill, but that is only part of it. Some of it is how you look, some of it is how it sounds, and da da da. So yeah, I do get it.
Drumming's a really good example, because some people get super irritated by who's the world's fastest drummer. Does it matter? Does it matter how fast you can go? Really? It's fucking useless.
Right.
It's useless.
You're never going to play a song at that tempo.
Yeah. What's the point of having that skill?
Right.
That's fucking senseless.
What's more important is, do you know what to do at the right time?
Yeah.
Which I don't.
Yeah. It's like these kids who learn how, this is a guitar frustration, but kids who learn how to fucking sweep arpeggio, and then you ask them to hold rhythm and they fucking can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you didn't even learn the rudiments. You learned the flashy bullshit that you heard in the deathcore song. Go get your shit together. You're not a musician. You're a kid who learned to do that sweep. Get that shit out of my face.
Just why no chords. And that's about it.
Learn your foundations.
I am.
Be a rhythm player first.
I am. I can do that.
That's crazy fucking sort of important.
All right. So.
You liked Whiplash. Yes.
I did. I did like Whiplash. Yeah. So Whiplash was great. And the thing about, I think about it that is most odd is I'm not a musician. I mean, I keep looking at you funny when you keep saying that because I like to think of myself as someone who's learning to be
You're learning, dude. Totally.
But I'm not a musician. I cannot create on my own. And I'm not someone who is good.
You're not arrived.
No, not at all. I'm still.
That's what I mean.
I'm
I don't
still
mean
tooling
that,
around.
I really don't mean that in an offensive way.
I mean, and I'm not saying that as trying to call you out on it. It's like I kept looking at you like I am a musician, and I realized I'm not.
I'll say it. You are,
but I'm not.
You're getting there.
I get it.
You're starting.
Yes. So I'm not a musician in the sense that the people in this was. And so I came from it from a very detached way.
Yeah.
Right. So that said, I think next week I'd like to do a movie that you would be very detached from as well.
Oh, God.
Okay. Oh, shit. You're not going to relate to these characters because you don't do the things they do.
Is this going
to
be the Rex Manning day all over again?
You don't come from where they come from. You don't have anything in common. You know, you know of it, but you're not part of it. In the same way that I know of music, but I'm not part of music. I'm learning it. Hopefully, you never have to do this. The name of the movie, it's on Netflix. I actually came across it randomly and watched it randomly for no good reason whatsoever and found that it was, a really good film. Hold on. Maybe you might know.
No.
Produced by... Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Sean Combs. Oh, Puffy.
Boy. All right. So we're already in territory, I guarantee. I have not seen this movie.
Forrest Whitaker.
Okay.
Pharrell Williams. Pharrell. Produced by.
Okay. So those are producers.
Those are the producers. Starring Shameik Moore, Zoe Kravitz, A$AP Rocky, Chanel Iman, Kiersey Clemons. And a bunch of other people I don't know.
I have no idea. Clue?
It's fairly new.
Zoe Kravitz, I thought we'd give it away.
Zoe Kravitz.
It didn't.
Name of the movie is called Dope.
I've seen this on Netflix on like Netflix. 5 times and haven't done
You've
it.
Not seen it? Did you add it to your queue?
No.
You did the opposite of what I looked at it and read it and was like, that could be interesting.
I didn't even read it. I just keep scrolling past it.
And I watched it, and I was like, that was a fulfilling experience.
Okay.
It's called Dope.
Not the same as Kid Cannabis.
What do you think that movie's about?
Dope? It's either about pot, or it's probably about the 90s rap scene?
Both.
Okay.
Sort of.
So it's about Cypress Hill.
So you are
yeah, please appreciate how good that joke was.
That was clever. So it is, and you're not a pothead.
No.
Good you're not God. A 90s rapper.
No.
You are as far removed from this, but still aware of it.
I like
as
Dungeons
you can
and
be.
Dragons and Dream Theater.
But you like I mean, but you get 90s rap culture.
Yeah. Oh,
you
yeah.
You're aware of it. You get pot culture, obviously. Look at the movies that you like. So
how weird is that?
Oh, I know.
How weird is it that THC makes me have hardcore panic attacks, but I think Grandma's Boy is fucking hilarious.
So I think that will be an interesting journey for the both of us to review.
In 100,000 years, I would have never guessed that this is the movie this week. Couldn't even have told you what it's called.
So, in the meantime, this has been the Negative One Podcast. You can reach us at Neg1Cast on Twitter, email, Facebook.
We were just on the Bad Advice Show, Christmas Hacktacular.
Hacktacular.
So, check that out.
Or Christmas Clusterfuck.
Yeah, is that?
As we've been calling it.
As we called it during planning.
Oh, God. So many people on that thing.
It was fun. Yeah.
Yeah, see you next week. That's all I got for you.
So does this mean we're done with the cult movies, right?
Yeah, we're done.
I mean, now that winter's actually beating the shit out of us.
We're yeah, I wouldn't call. Movie. I wouldn't have called Whiplash a cold movie. No. I mean, the guy was fucking cold, but...
Combo breaker.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, let me say, J.K. Simmons... fucking beast.
Yeah, no one could touch that Oscar.
I never.
That was his from 500 miles away.
Never would have guessed that he's got a range that was just, and when he was yelling at that, like, I was like, Dad, I'm sorry.
Well, and that's
I don't
funny.
Even know my dad, and I'm sorry, Dad.
Okay, so now that you've watched this,
yeah,
go watch when he hosted SNL, because his hosting of SNL was awesome. It's the complete fucking opposite.
Was he one of the nicest guys in the world?
It was just good. It was just a good comedic night. Like when he hosted, he's it was great. Awesome.
I'll never see a Farmers Insurance commercial the same again.
Not quite my fucking deductible. not quite my deductible.
Although the car crash in the middle of it could have just been a one long game for Farmers Insurance.
Well, one day I'll have you do Party Down for this podcast, on which he plays a super snooty and fucking rude LA producer dad, and it's so different, so hilarious.
He's got range.
He's amazing.
My God. All right,
that's enough. That's it.
NeoZaz.com.